Welcome to Your Path to Nonprofit Leadership, the weekly podcast that equips you with the latest insights and strategies to advance your career in the nonprofit sector. I'm your host, Patton McDowell, and delighted to have you join me for another strategic conversation. Now, before we dive into today's episode, I want to share some exciting news. Our firm, PMA Nonprofit Leadership, is about to celebrate its 15th anniversary. And part of our celebration includes launching a brand new website. Make sure you check it out, pmanonprofit.com. That's pmanonprofit.com. And it gets better. February is going to be a big month for us as we also release our 250th episode of this podcast. It has been an incredible journey, and I'm so grateful to you for being part of the podcast and listening each week. Now, to help us get the celebration started, we got a fantastic episode today. It's number 247, and our special guest has over two decades of experience working in the nonprofit sector and writing prolifically about it. His name is Eric Hanberg. He is a seasoned leader and indeed a prolific author, which you'll hear more about. But he shares much about his experience and what he is seeing, especially as it relates to that interesting and often challenging dynamic between executive director and board. Now, I'm always excited when a guest can break down their topic into practical takeaways that can benefit you and your organization. And Eric has exactly that. He has the 10 commandments for success in dealing with your board of directors. And we've got some bonus content from Eric because he also has what he calls the 4 D's. The 4 D's are keys to growing a nonprofit and being more successful. You'll have to listen up for those 4. Without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Eric Hanberg. Eric, thank you for joining me on the path.
I'm excited to be here, Patton. Thanks for having me.
I am excited about this conversation. You have published some wonderful material and content that our leaders and listeners need to check out, and we'll talk more about that. But you're talking about, and we will talk about some topics that I think are highly relevant. I hear this a lot, the challenge of a nonprofit leader working with their boards and board members, maybe in particular. And we're going to talk about the 10 commandments you have created to help us understand that, the 10 commandments of working with a nonprofit board. So let me start with an overarching question, Eric, if I could. What do you think is among the key struggles, or why do nonprofit leaders struggle with their board?
I'm excited to dive into boards, and that question really gets to the heart of it. Working as a director of a nonprofit for a volunteer board has got to be one of the strangest employment situations we have in the professional world.
Yes.
You're paid, they're not. You're the professional, you're the expert. They are donors. They come with passion, but maybe they don't know how to read a profit and loss statement. Maybe they don't know the ins and outs of your business, unlike a traditional boss. They also, you know, there's a lot of them. You don't just have one boss, you have 5, 7. I was hired by a board of 17. That's a lot of bosses. And, you know, do you work for all of them? Do you work for none of them? Do you work for the board president? And even if you think you know this, your board may not. An individual board member might have a very different idea of whether you work for them. You know, when they say, hey, could you write a 5-page report on this idea for me? Are you supposed to do that? These are the kinds of questions that a director can really struggle with in, as I said, a very unusual employment situation.
So well put. And I found myself nodding throughout. Our listeners can't see us as we look at each other, but I guarantee, Eric, they are nodding too. We have a lot of listeners who have experienced exactly that kind of strange dynamic of the executive and the volunteer board leadership. And of course, that's going to lead to the bulk of our conversation because you've got great practical advice for our listeners. But before we unpack that and your 10 commandments, how did you get into this work? And tell me about the experiences that led to your understanding of this board staff dynamic.
Absolutely. I have worked 20 plus years in nonprofits right out of college. I was working for a nonprofit. And then at the tender young age of 23, I was hired to run a nonprofit movie theater, the Grand Wow. Cinema in Tacoma. And the stars aligned for me to get that role. And I learned so much there at this, you know, small nonprofit, just really picking itself up. You know, we were only 6 years old at that point. Later, I worked in the development office of a Catholic high school. And if you ever want to see a fundraising machine, it is the development office of a Catholic high school. Like you just, you know, it's a system, and it was fascinating to watch. And I took from that this new understanding of like all the things that I wish I kind of had done a little bit differently at the Grand Cinema. I raised fundraising 400% when I was there. I did well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was like, wow, I made myself do a lot more work trying to throw a gala, you know, than I probably needed to, because I was copying the big boys. I was copying, you know, this Catholic high school, and I saw what it took. And I came to realize that the tote bags at NPR, you know, I've worked at a public radio station, the big galas at the Catholic high schools and the hospitals don't necessarily work for small nonprofits. They're right. At just a whole different scale. And so that was the seeds of my first book for fundraising for small nonprofits. Just like, here's what to take from the big, you know, the big operations, and here's what you should leave. And then I just kept going, and I started working with more nonprofits. I wrote books on social media, boards, nonprofit leadership. Since then, I've been a director of another organization. It was a small civic nonprofit, just me and another staff member. I've been the interim executive director of a couple, and I think I've served, if I count them all up, on something like a dozen boards.
Wow.
Capital campaigns when we've, you know, had to hire staff. Like once I was on the board president of a nonprofit when we had tried to merge with another nonprofit. I mean, just some fascinating experiences that have really helped me from all sides see how that board staff dynamic can play out.
Yeah, well put. And again, relative, I know, to so many of our listeners as they think about going through similar experience. I think many of us in the nonprofit sector are parachuted into situations, we're dropped in, expected to figure it out. And let me ask you again about the inspiration for the book. Was it kind of like, yeah, this I want to publish advice that I wish I had received? Or talk about the motivation to publish. I guess that initial one was around the fundraising side of things.
It really was writing to my younger self, you know, in so many ways. Most people, I think, have a similar path to me. I ended up at this nonprofit movie theater because I loved film. I loved movies. I didn't know that much about fundraising at the time. I didn't know that much about how a nonprofit was supposed to work. And so writing that book was trying to help myself, trying to help other people like me who are there because they love, you know, the historical society of their hometown, because they love the community theater or the food bank, but they don't know what the board relationship's supposed to be. So I'm trying to also keep them short. They're all the little book, you know, the little book of boards or something like that, because, you know, there's like the fundraising Bible, and there's very large books, and those are very helpful to certain situations. But at a small nonprofit, especially, I feel like it's like, get in, tell me what I need, get out. So that's kind of the tone that I've taken is let's try something quick and really help out that director.
Right, and that's, again, I would emphasize the practical nature of your work, because you're right. As much as I'm a big believer that you know, leaders are readers, but I also understand they don't have a ton of time. Right, if they want to go read the ultimate text of fundraising, they can, but you're giving them a shortcut to the practical realities. And again, I guess you in particular focus throughout your series of writing on the small nonprofit. Is that fair?
Yes, they all have that subtitle for small and very small nonprofits. I did feel really good. I was consulting with a director who was running, I think it was like a $20 million organization, and my book on fundraising was on his shelf.
Oh, good.
You know, I do think that it has broad applicability. But I figure, you know, I can write to this section, sector that I know, those really small nonprofits, particularly well. And I think that there's a lot that can be inferred or understood in a way that anyone can find them accessible, but they are really written for that one group in particular.
Yeah, again, appreciate that, applaud that. But as I think about the Ten Commandments, in which we will discuss momentarily, there's certainly application to any size nonprofit, right? Maybe variations, but would you agree?
Yes, I absolutely do agree. I think that especially that board staff relationship, it's in many ways, you know, whether you're a $2 billion nonprofit hospital or the small grassroots environmental nonprofit, yeah, that board staff relationship is probably pretty similar in all those situations.
I would agree. And well, I'm gonna offer the Ten Commandments to you. So Eric, you can explain to our listeners what you mean. You have very creative and pithy phrases I like that explain each of the 10, but I also may follow up with you and ask, all right, well, how do we apply that, right? And which, again, you have done and done very well. The first commandment in Eric's 10 commandments of working with a nonprofit board, you say, let the board govern itself. What do you mean?
It's really tempting as a director to try to, let's say, manage up. You have this board and you see something that might help. Like you know, you have a bunch of founders who have been on the board for 10 years and you think what we really need is term limits.
Yep.
And yes, you probably do need term limits, but you trying to tell the board, you know, hey, half of you have been here too long and you need to get out of here, it's not going to go very well.
No,
if you have a board president that is stepping down and the new board president, you're like, oh man, they're kind of a pain. You know, it might be tempting to go like try to recruit a different board president, you know, encourage someone else to apply. But I'm just here to tell you, if you've never been in these situations, this is fraught. Like it is, it's very difficult for a board member to do these things and not get their hand burned on the stove. The way I think about it is, the board needs to manage itself when it comes to these kinds of things. Let them pick the president. If there are policies, you can support it by saying, well, here's some pros, you know, policies under consideration. Here's some pros of term limits, you know, fresh blood every 6 years. Here's some cons. Yeah. We lose our long, you know, standing board members. Pros, cons, like that's a way to present it. And there might be opportunities to, like, as I think about it, like put your thumb on the scale a little bit. Like, you know, just kind of help support it. I think that you can be a little bit more open in committees and, you know, things like that. But if you're griping about a board member, if you're doing some of these things, it's going to reflect poorly on you. And you're going to have a harder time relating to, as I said, like your bosses. If you try to get into the board business in this way, like there can be drama, there can be politics. Getting too involved in it is going to suck up a lot of time. And as I said, like you're probably going to get burned too.
Right. And I'm struck by finesse, right? Even if as an executive, you may know exactly some sort of change, but your point, Eric, right, is that you got to be sensitive to that. And even if you know you're right now, you need to let the board kind of work itself out.
I think you can do things where you can create the container for some of these changes to happen. You know, like if you think that there should be term limits, make sure that encourage a governance committee. Like that's, you know, that's an easy thing. You're not telling them what to do, but having a monthly meeting of a team or every other month who's thinking about governance issues, that's the kind of place where these things might emerge. And even if that one doesn't emerge, other good things might emerge from it. Encourage board retreats. You can also, I think, be a little bit of a clerk sometimes and email that governance committee chair and say, hey, you know, I have some, you know, let's get you on the calendar again because we haven't met in a couple months. Like those kinds of things I think are totally appropriate without getting into the actual board business. You can help make sure that the train stays on the tracks. I keep mixing my metaphors here, but that the train stays on the tracks so that they can do the work if you are creating that container.
I think working with a board sometimes has lots of mixed metaphors, right? A lot of mixed everything. And so you're helping keep us straight. All right, let's go to the second commandment. Board members are board members first. Explain that one, please.
Absolutely. I have found that, you know, your relationships with board members will vary. Some of them might be friends. Some of them become friends because of your working relationships with them. And at times, you might be tempted to gripe about the board. You might be tempted to vent. And I this is a true story. I know an executive director who was doing that, who was venting to someone on the board about the board leadership and mulling, maybe I should get a new job or, you know, something like that. And this board member was like, hey, I'm a board and I just heard this from my executive director. I'm worried, and brings it to the board leadership. And in the turn of events that followed, he was fired.
Ouch.
And that is an extreme situation.
Yep.
But I do think there's caution there, in the sense that they might be your friend, but they're also, you know, 1/5 your boss, 1/8 boss. And there are certain things that if you bring to them, they might feel obligated to do something about. They don't just see it as like their friend, you know, griping. And then there's also just that thing that happens with gossips. Like if you're gossiping about board members to one, the other one thinks, well, what are they saying about me? I mean, this is what I tell, you know, my fourth grader. But at the same time, it's true of boards too. People totally start agree. To wonder. So the exception to this, because there's always, you know, some nuance, might be your relationship with the board president. Like having clarity with the board president, working on that relationship so that you can say to that person, you know, John is really frustrating me. How do we handle that? Like, I think that that's an appropriate use of that board president staff relationship. But outside of that, you got to really, really be careful, because they are board members and you work for them.
So well put. And again, what you described in essence is a culture that you have to adhere to, don't you? And if you yourself are guilty of the gossip and the, you know, back channel communications, it's going to come back to bite you. And clearly your example represents that. But I'm glad the third commandment, I guess, leads to the point you just made, Eric, about the somewhat unique relationship with the board chair or board president, right? And the third commandment you describe is never surprise your board president, especially at a meeting. I think that's self-explanatory, but maybe you can explain it even better.
I think that I can tease out just that relationship that you should strive to have with your board president. A weekly coffee, you know, is appropriate. Maybe some lunches, just really relying on them as a conduit to the board, relying on them to have your back. Hopefully, I think about that relationship as like a hinge that the nonprofit will turn on.
Yeah.
And so building that relationship is important. And one of the things is that, like, that board president is leading a meeting. They do a lot in that meeting. I've been board presidents before. You're calling on people, you're managing dissent, you're trying to actually get some business done. And if your director then drops a bomb in the middle of it about, you know, something that you could have told them about in advance so that they were prepared for it,
yes,
you're going to be really frustrated. And so try in those, you know, again, weekly meetings, or at least meet between every board meeting so that you can talk to them, you can use them as a sounding board, and have those regular updates. You will prevent derailing a meeting, because that's all your board president is really trying to do. Keep this meeting, I'm going back to on the tracks again, and your job is to make sure that they feel prepared to do that, and that you aren't dropping big surprises on them in the middle of the meeting.
Makes perfect sense. All right, but the fourth commandment, a variation perhaps, because you've talked about being in some ways deferential, in some ways, you know, not trying to be too aggressive as the staff member, letting the board lead itself. But number four, you talk about you need to assume leadership. So what do you mean by that?
A board is always going to want to get into the day-to-day operations of the nonprofit. They love it. And it makes sense. You know, they're on the theater board because they love theater, and, you know, or whatever.
Probably volunteered and have done things, right?
Exactly. Or they want to have an inside view. And if you give it to them, they will take you up on it every time. And so really looking at this and say, you know what, my job is to run this nonprofit. I'm going to do it how I think I should. I am going to lead the nonprofit. You're going to almost always do better than by deferring the actual job. Lead the nonprofit, and maybe sometimes you will have to ask for forgiveness and say, you're right, I got a little too far ahead of the strategic plan. Or you might have to say, you're right, you didn't actually authorize an education program. We had this partner and it just seemed like it was happening. I'll work with you to make sure that this is in next year's budget. And a director who is doing that, who every so often has to apologize because they went a little bit too far, is almost always doing a better job than the director who says, well, you know, I need the board input on that. I need the board input on that. I need the board input on that.
You could wait forever on that.
And you could wait. You could wait forever. Yeah. And so being the person to just keep pushing a little bit, you know, if you don't have a budget yet, pushing to get the budget. If you don't have the education program in the budget, pushing for these things, being the one to like drive is really important, because otherwise you just kind of start sinking as an organization. Someone needs to push, and you as the director are the one who can do that better than anyone else.
Yep. Again, well put, and assertive, I guess, is what we need out of our staff leadership, right? The board can govern itself. Indeed, we expect them to do their job, but you can't wait behind them all the time. It sounds like, right, Eric, that we're going to need you to be pushing things to some extent.
Absolutely.
Love this next one. The phrase you use is submit a written monthly report. And from the staff side, it seems to me we're always wrestling with too much information for the board, not enough information, or Eric, they don't read it. So what do I need to do to find that balance? So talk about what you imagine in submitting a written monthly report.
I have had great success writing a monthly report when as a director, and I frankly am shocked at when directors don't do it. To my mind, it is the easiest way to show what's happening. And I don't mean anything huge. I mean, you know,
how elaborate is this?
Two pages. You know, there's three main sections of it. Like let's say, three big things you've been working on. And then there's a section that says like other business. And sometimes it says, you know, met with 15 donors, or sometimes it says wrote a grant for da 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 da, or sometimes it says, you know, hired this new person, this role. It's a look at what you've been doing, probably delivered about a week before the board meeting so that you have time for them to actually read it. And then I think when you get to the executive director report, that's an opportunity to update and say, hey, you know, that grant, we heard back and we got 50,000 instead of 75. And you can talk a little bit and answer questions about it. I don't think you should go through every single thing again, because that's
right.
That's why you're giving it to them in advance. But you know, when you're the on a board, you really don't know what an executive director is doing all day, you know, to be perfectly honest.
Right.
You're only coming to meetings, maybe again, in those situations like a theater, or an arts program, you are seeing the nonprofit as a patron, as well as a board member or a donor. But not every nonprofit is like that. You might not see the actual tangible work of an organization that's doing like mental health for youth or something like that. You might not interact with the youth at all.
Right.
And so you really need those opportunities to hear from your board, to hear from your staff member, like, what are they doing? And keeping it high level, you know, what are some partners that I'm looking at? What's happening with the fundraising? Big high level, I think, is appropriate, with a little bit of detail sprinkled in. And you're going to make that board member feel a lot more comfortable with the organization, a lot more in touch. Yes, as you said, maybe it's on them to read it, and maybe they need to actually pick it up, you know, before 5 minutes before the meeting. But if you can provide that consistent feedback, feedback's the wrong word, that consistent communication, it will really help everyone, you included, especially when it comes time for them to evaluate
and your review. You're
exactly
right. I really like the cadence there too, Eric, because I'm guessing there would be an interaction with your staff to the extent you have a staff team. So they know there's going to be a monthly kind of cadence to this communication. You've developed, in essence, a two-page template, right? That's going to allow you to insert the highlights. But I guess it leads to a related question in, what about frequency of board meetings? Where do you stand on, I guess what you described suggests a monthly board meeting, but is that what you would recommend to a small nonprofit?
I'm familiar, most familiar with those organizations that meet, let's say, 6 to 12 times a year, you know, maybe okay. with 10 being the norm. They take August off and, you know, December something
off.
Like that. Yeah, something like that. I think for the smaller the organization, the more frequency makes sense.
Okay.
I like a nonprofit that's really with it can I think do a lot in, you know, every other month, with a strong executive committee, you know, who maybe meets in the in between months. I've seen quarterly, and I get a little worried that you're just not connected. You know,
enough.
You're not getting it. Yeah. You're not getting as much done. That's the expectation. And if that's what works for you, you know, that's what works for you. I think less than every other month, and you start risking the board really just not being connected in a way, you know, they forget what happened 3 months ago.
Right.
So I get a little squeamish if it starts getting under that.
Well, good segue to the sixth commandment, where you talk about attending as many committee meetings as you can. So in other words, you've kind of established that roughly monthly, or, you know, 8 to 12 meetings a year. But I hear a listener saying, Eric, I don't have enough time to go to the meetings I have now. But talk about your philosophy there of, as the director, getting to as many committee meetings as possible.
I think, first of all, I have just a love of really solid committee structures. I am a nerd about committees.
That's okay.
I like to say that committees are like the workhorses of the board. A good, you know, finance committee has been so invaluable to me as a nonprofit leader. A governance committee where we can talk about, you know, term limits, where we can talk about the bylaws. Also very valuable, even though, as I said, you know, you're not managing the board, but helping to create that container is really useful. So when I think about these, first of all, it's a chance to show up. It's a chance to show your bosses, again, that you are doing the work, you're supporting them, you're staffing that committee. And then you can help make sure that that committee work gets back to the board. I love committees where they say, you know, here's our new policy from the governance committee, and they bring it to the board and there's a discussion. And then instead of trying to fix it right there, which gives a little bit of... there's now this tension, like, oh, we're trying to pass this tonight and people are wordsmithing on the fly.
Exactly.
It's like, okay, we'll take that back to the committee and we'll talk about it. This is also true for budgets and all of these things. We'll take it back to the committee, we'll talk about it, and then we'll bring it back at the next meeting. That kind of a cadence, and having someone like a staff member who's there to help really manage it and make sure that that's what's working, and help those norms, that culture emerge, is a really great role for your staff member to be doing. It doesn't leave the board to its own devices. You are fully supporting the board in their work, and I really like this philosophy of serving the board as the keepers of the mission, keeping them engaged, keeping them involved. It's really important, I think, to be engaged with this group of people.
Well, and that's your point of the seventh commandment, isn't it? That let the board committees do their work, refer back. Because I agree, Eric, it seems to me a lot of times the committees exist in name only, but they're really not doing the work. And so maybe that's your point, right? That don't try to do the whole thing in the full board meeting. Send it back to the committee.
Send it back to the committees. Having the committees there to evaluate ideas, you know, like as you're thinking about the budget, having that finance committee that's strong with people who understand what a P&L is, who can look at a balance sheet and understand that. And they don't just exist with, you know, in name only, I think is really valuable to a director. I think it's good to check your own blind spots with a group like that. It allows for experts to emerge on the board. So all of those things are true. It also, and this is where this commandment comes from, it prevents you from being the bad guy every time.
Yeah.
You know, when a board member reaches out to you and says, hey, I have this great marketing idea, you can hear them out and say, you know, great, I'll talk to the finance committee.
Let's bring it to the committee.
You know,
yeah,
bring it to the committee. You don't have to be the one to nix bad ideas. It can just kind of die in committee. And that can be a really useful thing about having a structure, a strong committee structure, is the board can do that work on their own. They can hear the $50,000 marketing idea and say, yeah, that's not going to fly. And you didn't have to hurt that relationship with the board member when they're just throwing ideas out of left field, because man, board members love to throw ideas at you.
So true. And again, back to one of your earlier commandments, though, that lets the board govern itself, right? Or you're allowing the board to work if you bring those kind of issues back to them and let their system indeed, react and reflect accordingly.
Fold people back into the structure and just keep supporting the structure.
All right. Number eight seems as much a commandment as any that I read here. You describe it as never fudge the numbers, which at first I might be, all right, that seems obvious, but I'm guessing you've seen examples of maybe a slippery slope that a director can maybe fall into.
Yeah, it's not even about, illegal stuff, or straight unethical kinds of things, which I think we can all agree are no-goes. But, when you're a director and let's say you have a cash deposit. Do you take it in on the 31st of the month and then it counts in that month, or do you take it in on the 2nd and then it counts in that month? And you're like, well, if I take it in on the 2nd, because that means it's a slow month, I might be able to help boost the numbers. Decisions like that, like once you start playing that game, that's the slippery slope.
Yes.
Where you're trying to game the numbers. It's not illegal. It's not unethical.
Yeah. Right.
But it can eventually lead you to those kinds of things where doing something like that starts to kind of make some sense to you. You know what I mean? Where it's that slippery slope. So if you just say, no, I'm getting to the bank on this day because that's when I'm getting to the bank. And even if it means it shows a negative number next month, that's the way it is, because that's just the way it is. And don't let yourself fall into those traps of like, oh, I can just kind of move, reallocate things.
It undermines your credibility, ultimately, right?
Not to mention your credibility. Absolutely. If you have a strong, finance committee, if you have a good relationship with them, if they understand all of these numbers, and you say, yeah, November was light, but it's always low, and that's why we have, reserves, and here's the cash flow statement that says we're fine, they will get it. As opposed to trying to like prop it up. It's the propping things up and trying to play those games that can get really dangerous for a director.
I can see the pressure. And as a former fundraiser myself, you want good news for your board, right? And so I would think that might be another variation of this commandment, that I feel compelled to keep the mood good. So I only share the good stuff. And so would you agree there's a variation of, I don't want to fudge numbers, I need to be honest and maybe share the good with the bad.
That is so insightful. I served at one of the nonprofits that I served at, and things were just always kind of gloomy and dour, it felt like.
Right.
And I felt that pressure to deliver good news. And then there was one month where, I was just killing it firing on all cylinders. We had this event revenue sponsorship, and we had members and like attendance and all of these things. And it was still gloomy. And I was like, well, maybe this doesn't have anything to do with my performance. Maybe there's a personality things happening here, which is what was happening. Like I was taking this, the financial health of the nonprofit onto my shoulders and this emotional burden to bring good news. And you don't have to do that. Like if it's not great, work together to figure it out. Trying to find the silver lining doesn't always actually help the situation. So I agree with you.
So well put. And it becomes unrealistic and not sustainable, right? If you feel like you have to constantly cheerlead, and you've got to respect the fact that your board members are smart, right? They know there are going to be ups and downs. And so hopefully you create that kind of communication dynamic. Love commandment number 9, and you have phrased it as identify possible new board members. So is it a commandment, Eric, that if I'm on the board, I need to be helping recruit, I guess, the next generation of board members as well?
I think it is very important for the director to be highly engaged in recruiting. This is one of those places where you really can make a difference. You really can bring the kind of board members that you want to see. And it totally makes sense. You know the donors better than the board. You know the volunteers. You know which business in town who loves to partner with you. And you're like, why don't we ask the owner of that? You know the community leaders. You know these things, and the board doesn't necessarily. And so when you're talking to people, if you can say, would you be interested in standing for nomination? It's the director's job is not to say, now you're on the board, now you're on the board, now you're on the board.
I can't make the decision.
I can't make that decision. But if you can stack the deck with people you know you have a good working relationship with, who maybe in some cases, especially if you're kind of new, who have a relationship with you and not the previous generation. This is another time where it's really nice to start getting people who know and trust you, particularly as the director. If you can start bringing those folks into the room, maybe they're, doesn't mean you get every pick, but yes, you should feel empowered to go find new people and to help bring them into the process. You're going to really appreciate that over the next several years of your leadership of this nonprofit.
Love that. And again, I've seen, as you have, I'm sure, colleagues in the sector who kind of said, well, it's not my job. The nominating committee is supposed to do that. And I just accept who they bring in. But you're giving us a license as executive staff to help work that process too.
I think it's incredibly important. And again, your ability to do your job is dramatically affected by who's on the board and your relationship to them. So find the people you like, you want to work with.
Final commandment, do the work. Do the work. All right. What does that mean? And why did you put it number 10?
I think it's important, after all of these other things that we've been talking about, how you work with the board, it does take a lot of work. It does take time, but they are still expecting you to go off and run that nonprofit. They are still expecting you to come back with grants, new programs, and you can get sucked into drama, or you can get sucked into politics, and it suddenly you just feel like you're just spinning your wheels now. In some ways, when I say, write a monthly report, sometimes I think about it as like a motivational tool to make sure I need to have something for it. Like I need to actually have something to write down. If my monthly report is starting to feel a little light as a director, that's a sign that I need to go out and actually like keep doing the work.
Produce more.
Obviously some things take time. They take, months, if not longer, to see into fruition. And you get tired about saying the same old thing. It's in development. But you can continue to make sure that the work is happening. Let the board do their thing, and you deliver the mission that everyone is there that they also care about so much that they're willing to devote their time to this.
Fantastic, Eric. Just like each of the other 9 commandments, it's such a good exercise, I think, for a listener and a nonprofit executive to think and use these 10 commandments as they ponder their relationship with their board. And if they are aspiring to senior leadership, these are the realities they're going to deal with in terms of dealing with their board members. As you stated at the outset, the unique relationship with this multi-pronged boss that I might be dealing with. But I can't resist, Eric. We could close it now and declare a wonderful episode, but I noticed you had another really cool piece of content. It is the 4 D's of growing a small nonprofit. So let's give our listeners some bonus things to think about. There are 4 D's of growing a small nonprofit. I'm going to list them for our listeners, and then you can explain them. Documentation, data, development, and determination. All right, talk about those four. Why are those the 4 critical D's to growing a small nonprofit?
Absolutely. I'm glad we had time for this. I really think, especially at a small nonprofit, that director has that obligation, as we've said, to do the work, to push for growth, to try to, you know, get out of that maybe small organization and grow into something larger. What does it actually take? So many small nonprofit leaders think that, like, well, they go to determination. I'm just going to roll up my sleeves and I'm going to do it. I'm going to work 60 hours a week. I'm going to, you know, run myself ragged for this event that nets $15,000. They go to just determination. I'll work, 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 work. And determination is important. That grit, that, you know, fire in the belly, very important. So many of our nonprofits would not be here without it.
Right.
But it takes more than that. And so the first one you said, documentation. It's really important to make sure you remember what you did last year. You know, if you have an annual fundraiser, put a note on your calendar, you know, when to start planning it, you know, 4 months in advance. When do you need to get the reservation on the hall or the venue? Write out that calendar. What's your process for making sure that you get emails from the newsletter sign up at the booth from the farmer's market actually into your system? Someone should write this down. You know, I've seen quarterly days where you can, okay, let's remember, you know, let's do this. Let's get this systematized, Google Docs or whatever it is. Just get it all in writing, especially at small nonprofits where turnover is one of the biggest hurdles to any kind of growth.
Right.
If you can make sure that everyone is like documenting what they're doing, you don't lose the benefit of, you know, every so often you get like this young dynamo who comes in because they love the mission and they work for you for 4 years or 2 years before going to McKinsey or Amazon or who knows what. And if they walk away and now no one remembers what they did, that's not going to work. But if you can use their expertise to capture some of these things, you can start going. Databases, data, it's the same way. You know, do you know who your donors are? I like to say that professional fundraising is caring about the next dollar as much as this dollar. And so, you know, if you get $100 from someone, do you know why they gave it? Do you know how they gave it? Do you know their address? Do you know when they gave it? Like a database, so incredibly helpful. And so many nonprofits just think that it'll just happen. They don't plan for growth with data. And then the last D is development. And that might mean a board retreat. That might mean, you know, putting in $300 so that you can take some courses on, you know, what major gifts are or what have you, membership to a nonprofit center, putting in a little bit of staff development time really pays off at a nonprofit as you're trying to grow. You need new skills. You've got to learn somewhere. You can't just learn everything on the job. Some things have to be taught. And putting in a little bit of there, it's not a frill. It's not a later thing. That's what's really going to supercharge your growth.
Love that encouragement for professional development, career development, that every organization needs. And sadly, many nonprofits don't invest as you're suggesting. The ones that are going to grow, like you are suggesting, indeed will invest in all 4 of those, including their development. Eric, I got a page of notes. This is fantastic. I know our listeners do too, unless they are driving or in motion where they can't write notes, but they need to stop and listen and write it down. Final advice. You've been there. You parachuted in as a 23-year-old. What advice would you have for someone who's thinking about jumping into nonprofit leadership? Any final thoughts?
I think it is incredibly rewarding. I think you have the opportunity to meet people who you maybe wouldn't meet, you know, working in the belly of a large corporation. You're engaged in your community, and you can really build skills. So I fully recommend it. You know, learn your fundraising, learn your program, learn your board. Those three things, if you really put the time there, will really pay off.
Well put, as always. Eric, you're a very successful published author. We're, of course, going to lift up the books that you have for our listeners. I wonder, has there been a book that was inspiring to you on your journey that you might add as a recommendation to our listeners?
When I first was hired at the Grand Cinema, the book I picked up was Mission-Based Management by Peter, I think it's Brinkerhoff. And that book really helped me understand the day-to-day management of a nonprofit. I hope that my book on, you know, leading a little book of nonprofit leadership can live up to that, because that was the book that I really needed 20 whatever years ago. And I believe it's still available. So I hope you'll buy it. If you buy mine, you buy that one as well.
We'll have a package deal here, right, Eric?
There you go.
And we will lift up both your books, plural, as well as that one that you're recommending. That's a wonderful resource. And I will encourage our listeners to check out the show notes for this episode so they can find out more about the resources you've described. In fact, let's close with that, Eric. Where can people, where do you want them to go to find out more about you and the great work you're doing?
My website is forsmallnonprofits.com. I have blog posts. I have links there. And I also have a deal on my books if you buy them directly from the website instead of, you know, Amazon or wherever, where you can get 30% off of the little book of boards for your board if you buy five or more. And if you do that, I'll send you the other three books for free. So it works out. It's a great savings. We're saving the money that would have normally gone to Amazon if you buy in bulk. And so your board can read the board book, and the director can read the books on fundraising and social media and leadership, and everyone wins. So that's the benefit of buying direct.
It's fantastic. Thank you on behalf of our listeners for reminding us of that great offer and an opportunity to work with you indirectly, if not directly, through the great work you have published. So, Eric, for all of that and for everything you've shared with our listeners, thanks again for joining me on the path.
Thank you for having me here, and thanks for making the space for these conversations. I appreciate it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Eric as much as I did, and came away with some great takeaways that can apply to your leadership, both on the staff and board side. Now, for more information about Eric and his work, particularly all of his published books, make sure you go to the show notes for this episode. It's number 247. And remember, new website, pmanonprofit.com. There you'll find much more valuable information about this episode and all of the episodes we've done through this podcast. Now, of course, if you found this episode enlightening, and I hope you did, please share it with somebody else on the path. Eric's expertise can help nonprofit leaders at all stages of their career growth. And if you haven't already subscribed to this podcast, just visit the podcast page again, new website, pmanonprofit.com. And you will find out how to subscribe to this podcast and not miss a single edition. Remember, they're weekly, coming out every Thursday. Once again, thanks for listening to this podcast, and thanks for the wonderful work you are doing in the nonprofit sector. Please keep up the good work for causes that are meaningful to you, and I'll keep bringing you content to help you do it even better. Have a great week. I'll see you next time on The Path.